Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
The Go Birds podcast is sponsored by Ashley, America's number one furniture and mattress store.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today, and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Go Birds! What's going on, everybody, and good morning. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And every morning I say good morning, but today is an especially good morning. Today is one of the days I've been waiting for since the second I found out. Today is the day the Eagles go to Boston. I'm on my way to Boston. Eagles, New England Patriots, joint practice. We're here. It's arrived. A very, very important 2 days coming up for the Eagles. So they will not practice today. They might do some light work before they head to Boston. They're probably staying in Foxborough for what it's worth. It is annoying that they're called the New England Patriots. Everybody thinks of them as a Boston team, and they play in Foxborough. It just really makes no sense. But the Eagles are heading there today as we prepare for a practice on Wednesday at 10:15, a practice on Thursday at 10:15, and a whole lot of interesting football and drama in between. So depending on when you're listening to this, I'm staying in Providence, actually. So if you want to keep that going, I'm staying in Providence for a practice in Foxborough for a team that's called New England that everyone thinks of as Boston. This is why, as much as Boston is a great city, Philly and Chicago clear it. Guess what? The Philly teams play in Philly. The Chicago teams play in Chicago, at least for now. But very confusing. They really should be the Boston Patriots. They just should be the Boston Patriots. But depending on when you're listening to this, I am either in Boston, or Providence, I should say, on a train. But I guarantee you, wherever I am, I'm thinking about tomorrow. So today, we are going to recap some of what happened on Monday's practice. We heard from Sean Mannion, who had a bunch of interesting things to say about the game on Saturday. We got some positive injury updates. And then I saw a tweet that really had me thinking about how much Eagles fans actually suffer. So today, this is the last pod for really 4, 5, 6 days that is not going to be completely focused on the joint practices. And by the way, I'm bringing the Bulldog, David Uram, with me to Foxborough to cover the New England Patriots practices, and he's going to have eyes on AJ Brown the entire time. So if you're not following Dave Uram on Twitter, follow him now. He's going to be on some of the pods with me. I'm hoping to have BLG, who's going to be down there, on the pods with me, and we are going to recap everything AJ does, everything the Eagles does, everything the Eagles do, and what really are must-win practices. The Eagles are 10-2 in their joint practices. They always perform really well, and I think it can be a good indication of how a season is going to go. So while my mind is in Foxborough about New England, while I sit in Providence, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles, because they were on the practice field on Monday. And if you want to hear a complete breakdown of all 30 reps that Jalen Hurts took, you should go check out the post-practice pod. It's in the feed. An interesting practice. A lot of Jalen, a lot of backups, one noteworthy throw, and it was kind of a wrap-up before they go for these big joint practices. So that is in the practice feed. But let's get to, first actually, go check out Go Birds Insider. Go Birds Insider, it is the extension of the Go Birds family. Had a ton of fun in the chat on Saturday night with everyone that hung out. I love really intense Eagles fans. And if you were in the chat watching the game on Saturday night when you could be doing a billion other things, I love you. I love you with all my heart. So if you weren't there, come join us next Saturday. It's fun. It's a good place to talk about people that care about the little roster decisions that your friends probably don't care about, that your significant other probably doesn't care about. If you want to watch the game on Saturday night with all of us and talk about Gushikin or Maximus Pulley or Jake Majors, check out the Go Birds Insider link in the podcast description, daily email, and you get the chat. So very excited for that. And thank you to everybody that's a part of it. As I said, the schedule for today, they're traveling. So no press conference, no practice, nothing like that. All the exciting stuff starts tomorrow. As for the injury report, there was some good news for the Eagles on Monday. So there were really four key players that have been dealing with injuries. And that's Devontae Smith, Mekhi Lemon, Quinyon Mitchell, and Cooper DeJean. Good news on pretty much all of them. Devontae Smith was back at practice on Monday. He didn't do team drills, but he was back at practice. Cooper DeJean was back full go, and Quinyon was back seemingly full go. So they're good. They're going to practice against the Patriots. I will see how much Devontae does against the Patriots. He didn't do any team reps, so wouldn't shock me if he didn't do any team reps on Wednesday. But he was back practicing, so a step in the right direction. And then Mekhi Lemon, while he didn't do any team reps, did run off to the side for the first time since, at least publicly, injuring his hamstring. He was doing cuts, he was running routes, so that was encouraging to see. So I don't think he'll practice against the Patriots. Definitely would be shocked if he played on Saturday night against the Patriots. But I think there's a chance now maybe he gets that final preseason game and is able to play. So good news. I'm excited for Mekhi to get back out there. You know, obviously I have my opinion. Like, I've been a little skeptical about the pick. I don't think he's played well, but I'm excited for some new information about Mekhi, right? Watching him practice more, see how involved he is, see how he plays. I think it's time for that next step. So hopefully he can be 100% soon and get back out there. So outside of that, a bunch of other players are up to 16 players dealing with some version of an injury. So, you know, a decent chunk of the roster. Jacorian Bennett dealing with a knee injury. Tank Bigsby is dealing with a toe injury. Grant Calcaterra dealing with a back injury. Jonathan Jones still dealing with that shoulder injury. Mac McWilliams, a groin injury coming out of Saturday night's game against the Ravens. John Ojukwu, who started the game, dealing with a pectoral injury. Damon Pierce has missed some time now with that hamstring injury. Jose Ramirez also dealing with a ham injury. And then Johnny Wilson did not practice on Monday either due to a knee injury. Sean Wade, the cornerback out of the CFL, dealing with, you don't hear this very often, an eye and a shoulder injury. So all those players I just said did not practice on Monday. A few players were limited at practice. Tariq Castro Fields with a heel injury. Danny Gray with a concussion, although he did do teamwork. He seems full go in my opinion. Keyshawn James Newby with an ankle. Devontae Smith with, as I talked about, with the hamstring. And then Cole Wisniewski with the hamstring. Good to see Cole Wisniewski back out there. I don't think he'll be making the team, but good for him to be out there and at least try to make a push to make the roster. So that's where the team is at from a health perspective. And outside of Mekhi Lemon, like, they should be pretty much full go for these Patriots practices, which I am very, very excited for, in case you can't tell. All right. On Monday, Sean Mannion spoke for the first time since Saturday night's game. And Saturday night's game, as we know, was awful. They did not play well. The offense was really bad. The coaches think it. I know the players know it. And, like, just a really bad showing. But it was also Sean Mannion's first time calling a game as an offensive coordinator. So Sean Mannion got to the press conference. And here's one thing I'll say about Sean. And I think this is fair to say in a friendly way. He is a football guy in the way that you can, like, so he showed up to the podium today. He's clearly been wearing the same hat at every practice because there's tons of sweat stains on it and a rip in his shirt. So he is, like, locked in on football. Maybe a flaw of me, if I were a coach, would be I'd be very concerned with what I wore at the podium. Have I worn this hat before? Have I worn this shirt too many times? Does this shirt look cool? Does this shirt have a hole in it? Sean Mannion doesn't care about those things. He is locked in on football. So he sits down at the podium, hole in his shirt and all. And I ask him, what'd you think of the offense overall? And here is what he had to say.
What was your, initial thoughts on the first time out there?
Yeah, obviously, you know, want to have a better performance offensively than we put on tape the other night. But, you know, we got things that we need to correct. I thought the biggest thing that stood out in the game is we weren't staying on schedule, right? We had a lot of first and longs, second and longs. You know, penalties led to a lot of that, a couple negative runs. So, I think if we were able to better stay on schedule and kind of eliminate some of those miscues on early downs, we'll keep ourselves in more manageable third down situations and lead to a better result.
One kind of concerning thing, depending on how you want to look at it, is a lot of players were saying the same things that impacted the team last year. Now, maybe it's just when you don't play well, there's often a lot of the same things. You're not converting on third down, you're getting behind the sticks. But when Mannion talks about staying on schedule, that is something you heard Kevin Petullo say a lot last season. When Sean Mannion talks about, you know, a penalty that puts you in first and 20 to start the game, that's something the Eagles dealt with a lot last season. So, again, not to keep beating it, I don't want to use that expression, not to keep banging the same drum, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, scheme matters. I get it, right? But I just thought the first play was such a good example of how much players matter more. Like, you can have the best scheme in the world. You can practice it. You can do all these things. Eli Stowers holds or whatever it was, boom, done. You're in first and 20. And now that plan you have is basically gone. So I think Mannion got his first kind of read and look at, like, you can plan all week, and then Sunday, things can change very quickly. And then it's about having great players and making great adjustments. And those are the things we'll have to find out if the Eagles have. But another part of Saturday was Sean Mannion did call the game from the sideline. In the Eagles broadcast, they said on Saturday that Ross Tucker, I believe Ross Tucker said it. I'm not sure who said it, actually. But they said that Mannion was going to call Saturday's game, the upcoming game against the Patriots, from the booth. So Mannion was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
What differences are you keeping an eye on in the operation when you move to the booth?
You know what? I think it'll just be more for me and just how I feel I can see the game from there versus the sideline. You know, I've spent the majority of my life on an NFL sideline, a college sideline. You know, I've seen the game from that perspective. I spent a year in the booth in Green Bay, but in a different capacity. So I think it'll just be to get a feel for it, honestly. I just kind of want to experience it once, and I think it'll offer good perspective. And like I said, it was comfortable in game, but the plan all along was to kind of get a taste of both and then move forward with a plan of attack for the regular season.
So my opinion on this is a little split. And I talked about this actually in the email with the Daily Go Bird email, the Daily Bird, Jack Fritz's favorite name, on Monday, which is, you know, it's kind of like a reminder of how young he is as a coach and how little experience he has, that he is still deciding where to call the game from. Like, Vic Fangio got here and it was, I'm calling the game from the booth because that's where I've always done it, right? Like, Kellen Moore called the game from the sideline because that's where he does it. Sean Mannion doesn't know where he likes to call the game from. And so I think he will ultimately end up calling the game from the sideline. And I do support the experiment of figuring out where you should call it from, because I think the more information you can get, the better. But obviously you would love if you were hiring a coordinator that was like, yeah, I've done this for a few years. I know where I want to do it from. So it's a reminder that Sean Mannion is really figuring this all out as he goes, right? Like, Saturday was the first time he ever called games, plays an NFL game. And next Saturday is the first time he'll ever call plays from the booth. And then the third game will probably be the indication of where he's leaning. So, you know, my guess is the sideline. I think there could be some potential danger in, like, pivoting at the last second to the booth. But he's going to test it out and try. And so I respect the experiment, but it is a reminder a little bit about how young he is. Now, part of him being good is going to be the ability to see what he can be better at and self-scout. So Mannion was asked about, like, his self-scouting process. And here's what Mannion had to say about how he kind of looked back as his first game, not so much from the offense, but just himself, how he thought it went on Saturday.
So what was your personal self-scouting process like after the first game?
Yeah, you know, I felt comfortable. I felt the call sheet was well organized. Like I said, I was really satisfied with you know, our staff, our players. I thought the communication with Nick, the communication with the players on the sideline, substitution was clean. I'd say, you know, one game in, I'm very, very happy with our process, and, you know, we'll keep always, you know, like anything, whether it's scheme or the process on the sideline and calling plays, we'll always try to see if we can make it better. But honestly, through one game, I felt really good about it.
So when I was tweeting out what he was saying, I had to be careful to point out, like, he was not happy with the offense and how it performed. But I do like hearing things like he thought the play sheet was put out well. The communication was good. There wasn't times they were up against the clock. Like, those little things do matter. Now, the results weren't good, so all those things don't matter if the plays aren't good. Like, the Eagles can have the most, you know, well-executed communication and out the huddle at every, you know, 15 seconds every time. If the plays aren't good, it doesn't matter. But since he is, you know, a baby deer when it comes to this thing as offensive coordinator, it's good to hear that he thought the play sheet was well, like he did a good job preparing, a good job organizing the communication. And that's something other players have said. We talked about this on Monday's Daily Pod about how, like, Andy Dalton and Tanner McKee also felt that went good. Nick Sirianni also felt that went good. So that does matter, right? Like, it again, doesn't the results on the field are all that really matters, but it could get really complicated real quick if, like, the play sheet wasn't organized well, like all those things. So I do think that is good to see. So the last, like, non-Mannion specific or more Mannion specific thing, specific? Yeah, the last Mannion specific thing I have is he was asked about using the full playbook up against the Patriots in these upcoming joint practices. So obviously we know on Saturday didn't use the full playbook, and Mannion said, you know, in these preseason games, we're mostly evaluating. We're not game planning. We're not adjusting all those things. So he was asked, like, how much are you going to use against the Patriots in these two big joint practices? And here's what Mannion had to say about that.
Can you dip into the playbook a little more in joint practices, because there will be film for other teams as well?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you're practicing, you're always kind of exploring new things. You're tinkering with things. You have your system in place. How do we make little tweaks? How do we build off of some things we've been doing? So practice does give you an opportunity to explore that further, especially a joint practice going against a different team, a different defense, front structure, so on and so forth. So there is a little bit of a window to do that in the joint practice setting.
So I swear in my life, as he was saying this, I thought to myself, I should ask if the fact it's the Patriots impacts it at all, since they've been caught videotaping before. And, like, I didn't, because it isn't a new regime and all those things, but I don't know, if you're the Eagles, aren't you thinking about that a little bit? Like, the Patriots are getting to record all this too. So the Patriots could record it and send it to, you know, who's the first AFC team they play? The Titans, right? John Vrabel. Mike Vrabel used to work for the Titans. The Eagles play the Titans in week two. Are the Eagles going to show all their looks and the Patriots are going to, you know, give it to the Titans? And I know there is probably an understanding when you do this, like, obviously don't. But I don't think the Patriots are above cheating. So I did think about asking it, but I didn't. I think they'll run their stuff, right? Like, I think they'll obviously hide some things, but as much as they value this joint practice, they have to be able to run their stuff. If you're just running the same vanilla stuff, what's the point of even doing this outside of, like, team building camaraderie and, like, you know, just getting good competition? So I think they will run some things. I think you hear Mannion say that they will run some things, but also they're going to be a little careful in what they show, just because they do want to keep the element of surprise for week one. So there was two other answers I thought he gave that were interesting. He was asked about Eli Stowers, how Eli Stowers performed, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, thought process for having Eli Stowers in that role. We've primarily seen him just with the third unit not doing a lot of blocking in team situations.
Yeah, I mean, we want to see what all these guys can do. And tight end's a position that requires a lot of versatility. We're going to ask all these guys to be productive players in both phases. And the preseason is a great opportunity to push these guys and evaluate what they can do and give them things to work on every day at practice and then see them take it to the game. I know Eli's, you know, put a lot of work into improving as a blocker. And along with that entire position group, there's a huge commitment to being productive in both areas. So we want to see what all of our players in that room can do in both phases of the game.
So Eli Stowers did not block well on Saturday night. Mixed reviews in terms of, like, what people thought. I mean, he definitely didn't block well. The question was mostly, you know, was he giving full effort? Was he invested in blocking? Did he look hesitant blocking? And, like, those are things you're just kind of projecting or guessing when you look at the screen. But yeah, when Sean Mannion says, you know, versatile tight ends or need to be able to do things, like, I don't know what they were thinking Eli Stowers was going to be able to do. They knew he couldn't block coming into the NFL, and they knew that was going to be a tough task to get him up to speed in time for week one. So I do think they view Stowers as, like, a 2027 player, but he really could have a slow start. Like, he could be a healthy scratch week one. And last year with Calcaterra, they kept putting him out there to block and it kept not working. And my whole thing was, well, You know, who else are they supposed to put out there, right? Like, the coaches are doing it for a reason. With Eli Stowers, they knew what they were getting into. So if they have Eli Stowers, like, pulling from one side to the other and blocking and stuff this season, then yeah, they deserve blame for that. Because Howie Roseman said, you know, we need to have more versatile tight ends, and they've not gotten them. Like, Goddard is the same guy he was last year. Calcaterra is the same guy he was last year. Eli Stowers is not versatile right now. And Johnny Munt's versatile for sure in the way that he can really block and is probably an average receiving tight end. But he's not somebody that teams are, like, afraid of as a receiver. So they don't really have a more versatile room. And the Eli Stowers thing, as much attention as Mekhi Lemon is getting. Think about this. Mekhi Lemon is getting more attention not practicing than Eli Stowers is practicing. So that's not a great sign. And the next, he was asked about the quarterbacks and how they performed. And here's what he had to say.
How would you assess the quarterback play with Indian and Tanner in particular? Just how they do it.
Yeah, you know, there was some good and some that can obviously improve. You know, I think, you know, the third downs have got to be better there. Some of them were tough spots, to be fair. You know, even in the third and extra long situations, it's going to be an uphill battle. But, you know, I think just play the play. Just stay with the process. Stay with your read, your footwork. You know, there were some good examples. You know, Tanner hit a slant route. Cole hit one to EJ over the middle of the field. You know, we had to get back on track on the first series of the game. Andy had a nice ball to Coop on an out route to get us into a third and manageable, then we take a penalty to go back to third and 15. So, you know, there were some glimpses there of what we want to see, but I think the biggest thing that, you know, the whole group can improve on is just stay within the play, trust your footwork, trust your training, and go cut it loose.
So I talked about the quarterbacks a lot on Monday's Daily Pod. I think they're mismanaging it. I think they've put in Tanner McKee. They have put Tanner McKee in a tough spot. They're doing this all for Andy Dalton, who hasn't played well in the NFL for a long time. So they got in a tough spot with a quarterback, and I think they have to seriously consider trying to trade for one, at least look around, or just go all in on Tanner. But at a certain point, you, like, when Nick's like, we don't know who the two or the three is yet, and, like, making sure that's clear. Like, I don't know. I think they're really mismanaging it. And so it's not surprising neither played well on Saturday, because neither are getting full-time reps. They're splitting it all the time. They're playing with different players all the time. Like, that's a tough way to go out and succeed. And then you add the fact they're not game planning and it's vanilla. And yeah, it makes sense why it was a bad performance on Saturday night for the quarterbacks. I don't know what evaluation you're really getting from that. All right. On the other side, I saw a tweet recently, and it's time for me to talk about it. So we will talk about that on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly starts, and advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I saw a tweet recently, and this tweet is from Sleeper NFL on Twitter and on X or whatever. And it was basically ranking the NFL fan bases that have suffered the most. So it says ranking NFL teams by fan suffering. And it says historically, right? So it's not just saying since 2000, since, like, historically. So you're taking everything in. And the fans suffering the most, which I think makes sense, the Cleveland Browns, the New York Jets, the Raiders, the Cardinals, and the Dolphins. After that, and they're labeling this one pure agony, the Chargers, the Falcons, the Lions, the Bears, Washington, the Panthers, and the Titans. Now, like, you know, Panthers and Titans don't have, like, real fan bases. So I don't know how much they're suffering, but yes, they have not been good teams. Miserable fans, the Steelers, the Bengals, the Cowboys, the Vikings, the Colts, the Jaguars, and the Texans. On and off is what they call this one. The 49ers, the Bucks, the Giants, the Saints, the Broncos, and the Packers. Then the no suffering. You got the Seahawks, you got the Rams, you got the Bills, you got the Ravens, and then you have the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the top one, literally a utopia, Patriots and Chiefs. So First of all, and I think the reaction to this is probably correct. Whoever made this is probably like 24 years old, right? They're running a sleeper team NFL X account, and like, far be it from me to dunk on someone from not knowing the history of things, right? Like, history is not my strength, even though I went through a period where I read a lot of historical books. But obviously, like, the Bills fans have suffered, clearly. They lost four straight Super Bowls. I don't think they've ever won one, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I don't think they've ever won one. They've never won a Super Bowl. But their team's been awesome for 5 or 6 years. So if you're 22 and you only started following football when you were like 15, then yeah, you don't think the Bills have really suffered. But losing four straight Super Bowls, yeah, that's like a suffering fan base. So first of all, what I did was I tried to go out and rank how I think. But what I would say about like the real takeaway from this is that the perception of the Eagles and the fan base and like what Philly sports has to deal with has really, really changed. And you can see it's changed just based off where they are at in this poll. Because if you are 23 years old or whatever, you only ever know the Eagles being awesome. Like since 2000, really, from 2000 to 2004, the Eagles were awesome. They won the Super Bowl in 2017. They were super interesting and not like, you know, terrible in between ever. Really 2020 and I guess 2012 would be the 2 years where they were really bad. And then the last years, they've been one of the best teams in the NFL, if not the best team in the NFL. But in terms of how much the Eagles fans have really suffered, I thought actually the Cowboys are a good kind of comparison here. So I put this poll out on a Monday morning, and I asked simply, which fan base has suffered more? The Eagles didn't win a Super Bowl until 2017, but have been mostly awesome / better than the Cowboys for the last 25 years, and obviously now have won two Super Bowls. Or the Cowboys, who have won five Super Bowls, but not sure if you've heard this, haven't been there since 1996. A lot of VHS jokes to be made there. So I think that, you know, in terms of which one has suffered more, it's really what you prefer. The Cowboys, over the history of their fan bases, have kind of suffered less because they won those five Super Bowls. Now, it was over, you know, the three Super Bowls they won with Aikman, Michael Irvin, and Emmitt Smith were over like a short period of time. And then obviously the two they won prior, like they've been not hot garbage because they have competed and won double-digit games and made the playoffs, but they haven't been like true Super Bowl contenders for the majority of the last 25 years. The Eagles have been Super Bowl contenders more, but had to wait until 2017. So, you know, if you're a 60-year-old Cowboy fan, you remember those glory years, but it's been a rough last 30 years. If you're a 60-year-old Eagles fan, you're probably not in the camp of Nick Sirianni's not good at his job and Jalen's a bad quarterback because they have led what has really been the golden era of the franchise. So clearly my Twitter audience leads Eagles. It's mostly Eagles fans. And of the, as a recording, close to 2,000 votes on this, 55% Eagles, 45% Cowboys. So mostly a 50-50 split. So, you know, some of that is probably Cowboys fans suffer because they're Cowboys fans. But I think it's a really interesting way to look at it. Like Eagles fans, you know, are viewed as like this historically suffering fan base. But they've had it pretty good for a large portion of the franchise now. Like 25 years, they have been probably a top 10 team in the NFL, if not more. So I went through and I tried to list where I thought roughly I would rank like the most suffering fan bases. So first, I think if you've never won a Super Bowl, you got to be at near the bottom of the list. Now, while these teams have been better than some of the other teams, like the Browns and Lions, their fans care so much about it and they still haven't won it. I think they got to be the two most suffering fan bases in the league. You could go to the Bears, but they've won one. So, and the Browns are almost never competitive. The Lions have become competitive, but it had been what, like 20 something years since they won a playoff game before that. So I feel like the Browns, Lions, Cardinals, Falcons, Panthers, Bengals, Texans, Jags, Chargers, Vikings, and Titans, like the teams that haven't won a Super Bowl, you're at the bottom of the list. Not to mention a lot of those teams are never even remotely good. The Titans, you want to talk about suffering, losing the Super Bowl by 1 yard and then never really competing again. The Vikings getting trashed by the Eagles a few years ago. You know, they lost the NFC Championship game to the Falcons a bunch of years ago. But like then, you know, I'm not like caring about a Jaguars fan suffering. They don't know what suffering is. But those teams, I think, have to go down. And then the Bills, in my opinion, are at the top of the teams that haven't won a Super Bowl. I actually think they maybe deserve more to be near the Browns or the Lions because they care so much and their entire franchise is just like built in heartbreak. And then at the top, I think the Patriots and the Steelers have actually suffered the least. They've won six Super Bowls. The Steelers are competitive all the time. They make the playoffs all the time. They've had the same head coach. Like, they belong at the top. So the only fan bases I think have suffered more than the, or suffered less than the Eagles. I have, yeah, I think I'm saying that right. I have number one Patriots, number two Steelers, number three 49ers, number four Packers, number five Chiefs, and then Eagles and Cowboys are really close. I put the Cowboys right ahead of the Eagles. So, yeah, I mean, Jeffrey Lurie, what he's done in the 25 or probably 30-ish years of ownership is remarkable. He's kind of really changed how this fan base is viewed, how the fan base should be viewed nationally in terms of suffering. So I understand why people are like, what are you talking about? No suffering? Like, that's crazy. But I don't know, man. If you're like under 30, you probably don't view the Eagles at all as a team that suffers. All right. That'll do it for today's Daily Pod. We have made it. We've made it. The joint practices are here. Let's freaking go. Until next time, he's Elliot. I'm James. Talk to you guys later.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.